We're sitting on the edge of Southampton Water, looking across to the city of Southampton. As we look out, the Viking bravery, a car carrier is going out. We are surrounded by, to our left, we've got container ports everywhere and containers stacked high. And over on the other side, we've got Ocean City and the cruise liner terminals. But we are here at Marchwood. Tell me about Marchwood Port.
Marchwood has been around since the Second World War, and this port was essentially the launching ground for D-Day. Since then, it has been used for all military shipping operations and has been occupied by 17 regiments since 1949.
General Talk, the Army of 11 Fund's monthly podcast. I'm Harry Buckland. The Army is the top apprenticeship employer in Britain, followed by BT, the Royal Navy, PricewaterhouseCoopers International, and the Go Ahead Group. On average, there are 13,000 Army apprentices on the scheme at any one time, training up on 37 different standards or job qualifications. In this and the July edition of the programme, we focus on a key element of soldier training and development, the Army Apprenticeship Programme, a journey that will take us from the military port of Marchwood to London and in July to the guns of the King's Troop Royal Horse Artillery and the gunnery of the Royal Dragoon Guards on Castle Martin Ranges, as we talk to soldiers and their instructors about their experience as apprentices in the making. To begin, I'm joined in Marchwood by Lieutenant Nathan Cosgrove, Yankee Troop Commander, 5-2 Squadron, 17 Port and Maritime Regiment, Royal Logistic Corps, and two soldiers in discharge, both apprentice port operatives, Private Robert Brooks Wardle and Private Ellis Feathers. And in London by Colonel Caroline Emmett, Assistant Head for Learning and Development in the Army, who is the policy lead for the Army Apprenticeship Programme. I'm sat here with Private Robert Brooks Wardle and Private Ellis Feathers, and you are both on the Army Apprenticeship Programme. And so, as a port operative, what is the role of a port operative?
So we deal with the vehicles coming in and off ships. We lash them down, and containers as well. So when they come on ships and go off ships, we deal with them, make sure they're secure on the ship.
And how many ships do we get coming in a week here?
It varies from time to time.
It varies. We'll have really busy periods where shipping will be absolutely crazy, and then they'll be slightly more quiet. 5-2 are actually taking over shipping at the minute as well, so we are due to be on shipping duties. So we're going to be the home squadron, and then 5-1 are the away squadron. So we'll be basically taking over the ships, so we'll be a lot more busier now. We'll be taking over ships more frequently, won't we?
Yeah. Did you... When you joined the Army, did you expect to be coming into to 17 Port Maritime Regiment, or did you think you were going to go to a normal logistics squadron driving lorries up and down the main supply route?
No, so when, even at selection process, so even before you're at basic training, you kind of know where you go in. So you select your job role, or they really offer you the jobs that are priority jobs as well, and port operator was one of them. I personally thought, well, that sounded interesting, a bit niche and a bit unique, which is why I went for it.
Why did you think it was unique, Ellis? What was the attraction to port operative? Did you think it was a lot of by the sea?
Yeah, so I thought it's more by the sea. I liked the element of like the Navy side to it as well. At the time, I was kind of, this was before I joined the Army, Navy was one of my options as well. So I liked the idea of being in the Army but doing more of a naval role. Obviously, it is an Army, but it has that element to it as well, and no other job in the Army has that.
What attracted you to the Armed Forces in the first place?
So my dad actually served 30 years. So it was always in the back of my mind. He was a medic, so Royal Army Medical Corps, combat medic. So it was always kind of in my mind to do it. I was 25 when I joined, so I was going into a little bit later. But yeah, I liked the idea of being in the Army. I'd had that kind of background growing up as well, so it was it wasn't new for me.
And how about you, Rob? What made you want to join the Army?
So when I was looking, I wanted to join the Navy first. My dad was in the Navy, so I was going to sort of follow in his footsteps of that. And I was going to join as a mine clearance diver, but then I was like doing my research on the Army, and I looked at port ops, and they they do a lot of diving as well. And that was what attracted me to join as a port op, is the diving side of it.
What's your family thinking about you joining the army?
They were proud of me for joining. They were happy. It was you know, something that they wanted me to do.
There wasn't any backlash, so you should have been joining the senior service.
No.
And the role, and we're looking out here, we can see behind us some guys on a Mexi float. You presumably work off the Mexi floats a lot, as stevedores, since you're going back and out two ship, bringing kid material off. What's the most...
Yeah, they're also used for beach ops as well. So the ship will be out in the sea, and we'll load the vehicles onto the Mexi, and then the Mexi will come down, bring it onto the beach. It will come up to the beach, and then we'll put a trackway out, and then the vehicles on the Mexi will be loaded onto the beach.
What stage did you understand that you were going to become apprentices?
So I actually found out when we was on our class 3, so when we was on our trade course, a man called John Strike, who was actually stationed at Marchwood, he told us all about the apprenticeship. It was optional as well, so he kind of told us all about it, and then we had the opportunity to sign up if we wanted to, and obviously we both did.
So why did you sign up, Ellis?
So I liked the opportunities it sort of presented. I like that not only is it a transferable skill after, so when you want to leave the army, I can continue doing the job, because it's a civil qualification. Also, you get your functional skills whilst you're on. So if you didn't achieve a C level higher than in English and maths at school, you can do it on the apprenticeship. So I needed my maths, so I got it, and that's all done now. So not only have I got a qualification in my maths, I'm also going to gain a civvy qualification in this job as well. So I like that.
And Rob, how about you? When did you learn you were going to become an apprentice, and why did you accept it?
So for me, it was the same time when I was on my port off class 3. I accepted it for the civvy qualification, like to be able to eventually leave the army and go on to doing this in civvy street, and that's what attracted me to do it.
But if you didn't accept the apprenticeship, you'd still be trained in the same way, so sure you'd have the same qualification when you left.
No, because of how it works. So obviously, if I didn't accept it, I wouldn't get I wouldn't have the qualification after the year had finished, so I wouldn't be able to use that.
And what does the qualification give you? What apprenticeship as a port operative? What does that actually qualify you to do?
So it qualifies you to drive forklifts, JCBs, and other stuff like that. I'm due to go on my quayside crane course in July as well.
And we've got two quayside cranes here. They're pretty enormous.
I've done boat lifts with the quayside cranes. So I was part of a boat lift team. I've done that about 3 times. So I've seen the way they operate, but I haven't actually operated one yet.
And you're going to learn to become that. Anyway.
I will, yeah. I'm hopefully going to be on that course as well.
And Rob, tell me, how long does it take to become a quayside crane operative?
2 weeks.
And you're up in that in the cab on your own up there, and you're a huge amount of responsibility. How long will your apprenticeship take to complete?
So I started it on the 13th of October last year, and it will take 366 days to complete. So
that's
just,
not
just a year.
And you get a level 2 port operative apprenticeship. That's what the civvy qualification is.
And that means you can go and work in almost any port around the country.
Absolutely.
But it requires a lot more extra work on both your parts, and that assessment is done by your non-commissioned officers in your troop and squadron, and presumably also in the regiment, but presumably outside also there must be some form of external validation of your work. Who does all that?
So it's when you have your 3 assessments, then you've got a practical, so someone comes and watches. Is 3 hours long, so they're actually watching you work on the ship. Then there's a 45-minute question, knowledge test, so it's multiple choice. So there's that element to it. And then the final element is a discussion, which can last anywhere between 15 to 20 minutes. It's 15 to 20 questions in the space of 90 minutes. So it's kind of like a discussion. So they'll be asking you questions and sort of testing your knowledge on that. They'll come up with, like, sort of not debates, but just discussions, really. And then out of that, you get rather a pass, a fail, distinction. That's how it's graded.
Now, because you've got this extra training, Does that mean that your career prospects are greater within the Corps, Rob?
I would say so, yeah.
Will we see you with a stripe on shortly?
Probably, yeah.
How about you, Ellis?
Yeah, so on the apprenticeship, you cover a lot more as well. So you really sort of dive into the world of port operators, where things that you might not cover if you're not on the apprenticeship. So I definitely think it's worth doing just for the extra knowledge that you're getting, which will always help you in your role.
How do you find the extra work? Is that get in the way of your normal life, or do you find out that it just comes hand in glove with the job?
No, so you have to obviously put the effort in. It's the same with anything. You have to actually turn up and do the work. So where we do it is the education centre. So again, it's with John Strike, and he's an export operator as well. He was posted here at 17. And he really helps you understand and goes over things with you. So, and then we'll upload it on a system called OneFile. So if you're sort of, you know, you have to really put the work in, like I said earlier, and you have to make sure that you're regularly updating your OneFile and not just leaving it. So even if you've done something like, you know, relatively minor, like quite small, just like a few hours of training, you then go into the education centre, update on your OneFile. And that's how the apprenticeship works. It's logging all the effort and the work that you've put into it.
Rob, how up to date is your one file?
At the moment, it's not up to date.
Ellis, how about you?
Yeah, mine's pretty up to date. I'm pretty like sort of vigilant going in there. I'm actually going to go today and upload, because we are on ship Monday, where we actually done a little bit of training as well. Like I said earlier, 5-2 Squadron are taking over shipping, so we had like a training day just to sort of re-familiarise ourselves with all the equipment and just the job itself. So I'm going to then go into upload that on my OneFold today that I've done that.
Where do you prefer, being at sea or being on the land?
Being at sea for me.
Yeah, same for me.
On ship.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's why I'm really glad that I'm doing the job that I do, because, you know, obviously the army is known for its field work, but and being field soldiers, but I think this is such a different element to it, and I really enjoy that. I like that it's different. I like that it's a real niche role.
And as port operators, you all pretty much stay, it's like one big family. You're going to stay in this regiment pretty much all the way through, aren't you?
Exactly, yeah.
And what for you guys, as your apprentices, what's the most demanding aspect of the apprenticeship that you find that gives you must, is the most challenging element of the work you're doing at the moment?
I would have to say it's the continual learning. There's a lot of, in terms of health and safety, that we have to do, and knowing the job role as well. Yeah. So not working shipping for a while, you get skill fade, and then you've got to relearn all of that. Like how to lash down vehicles and stuff like that is quite a demanding thing.
How about a few minutes?
So for me, it was definitely the fast-paced element to the job. So especially when you are new at the job, and obviously we work on quite a tight time scale. So, you know, we want to work safely as we can, but also as quickly as we can. And sort of keeping up with that when you are new to the job can sometimes be quite demanding, and it makes you kind of, not panic, but you wanna do it safely, but you also wanna do it quick. So
what's the best bit for you, Rob?
Deployments, travel.
And where have you been to so far? That's
so last year I deployed to Kosovo in Albania, and then I also went to Greece. Like deploying is different to a holiday in terms of like you have to keep up with an expectation of being in the army. And like there was people around that knew why we were there, and it was like the expectation that we keep is professional.
But I like the fact that, like you said earlier, we're at this regiment and we pretty much do our career here. But I like that because it does feel like a kind of a family. You know, it's quite a small but, you know, unique regiment. But that is a big reason why I chose this job role. And I think it as well is that one of the best parts of Britain, personally.
And Nathan, you're the troop commander of the Yankee troop. What are the benefits for you having apprentices in the troop?
I think the main benefit for the troop and for the regiment in general is is the it improves the offer. So if you think part of the offer of the army is you come in and you'll do your service, and you may spend your whole career in the army. You do 22 years or longer, or you may decide to only do 3 years. But in that time, you can get yourself some civilian qualifications that will help you when you leave. And I think that's the big benefit, is it improves the offer and it attracts people to trades such as this, where that is an option, and it helps them on their future careers when and if they decide to leave.
Well, what I can say is Private Ellis Feathers, Private Rob Brooks Wardle, Lieutenant Nathan Cosgrove, to the pair of you two, the very best of luck in achieving your apprenticeship. And to the three of you, thank you so much for being my guest on General Talk this morning here at Marchwood.
Thank you very much for coming on.
So to London, where we pick up the conversation with Colonel Caroline Emmett, whose responsibility is to oversee the diverse army apprenticeship programme. The army didn't become the largest employer of apprenticeships overnight. What was the first apprenticeship? Do you know when it was first introduced?
So I know that it is our 100th, we are celebrating our 100th year of apprenticeships, but I think that's modern apprenticeships, because as a senior Marine officer rightly pointed out at the National Apprenticeship Awards, the Royal Navy is being offering apprentices since the 1800s, one could, or 18th century, one could argue.
And they were press gang, not volunteers.
Yes, exactly. But in terms of what we recognise as apprenticeship today, we would say that we've been doing it for 100 years, but I couldn't exactly tell you what the first apprenticeship was.
That's some track record. And you talk about how the Army is developing its own apprenticeships and its apprenticeship schemes. Do you also cross-pollinate with other large employers of apprentices like BT?
There are probably two main crossover points, either regionally through the ambassadors network, where we will share practices, ideas. That's where the bake-off came from, but also, as I also mentioned, through the Trailblazer group. So for some of our more cyber related, signals related apprenticeships, one would expect on the Trailblazer group there to BT would form a part there, and that's where the relationship with wider industry comes into play.
The Army at the moment, as we know, sadly is having problems in keeping its recruiting numbers up. Do you think that the apprenticeship scheme helps in terms of the offer that the Army can give to people wanting to apply to join the Army?
Yes, I think so. So from an individual perspective, so for the soldier themselves, what they're getting out of the apprenticeship is they're getting valuable skills for their role to enhance what they're doing in role for in UK and on operations. That's both technical and transferable skills. So, and by transferable skills, I mean things like problem solving and decision making, working within teams, interpersonal skills. But first and foremost, really gaining real confidence in role, in your specialism, and the wider ability to lead from the start of the career in apprenticeships. Enhance that. I think also, and what we call gatekeepers, you know, parents and wider family are not very keen on ensuring that their sons and daughters or if they're joining the army, being recognised for the skills, etc., that they're developing.
I mean, join the army and travel the world was always a catch, but join the army, travel the world, and be trained in the process—that is an even better catch, surely.
It is, but it's not. It's not just so. I would emphasise that it's not just for the individual soldier themselves, there's a reason why the army's decided to do this, and it is obviously it improves the offer and therefore is supportive of recruitment. But over and above that, we need high performing and technically astute operators of whatever specialism. We need that now and we need it in the future. We need our soldiers of the future to be active learners, because what the 2030s onwards say about what warfare is going to be, we need people that can upskill and reskill at pace. That requires people that can learn quickly on the job, and apprenticeships enables that early on, and that's why we'd always seek to expand the programme. And more widely than that, there's a wider benefit to society. The army ethos is join well, serve well, leave well, and you already mentioned that. So when a soldier apprentice or soldier, because they'll have achieved their apprenticeship, when they eventually leave, they re-enter the national workforce with STEM qualifications, with those transferable skills that I mentioned, and that's what other employers are also looking for. Mm-hmm. So that's a win-win situation.
For you, you've got 13,000 people that you need to be care of. You've got their training infrastructure. What are the great challenges that in running the apprenticeship organisation for the army for you?
So I'm very lucky in that I have a big team, and I have a competent team, and let's be frank, you know, I am the SRO sat up in Army HQ. The cat badges are actually running, you know, they do, so the core colonels are integrally involved in leading their own cat badge program or programs, be it what they are. So I manage the overall portfolio, but on a day-to-day basis, it's cat badges that will do it.
But someone has to be, to ensure that the benchmark and the standards are maintained, and how would you assess that? Are you the benchmark, effectively, at the top of the organisation? How do you keep that up to pace?
So we have lots of, as one would expect, quite comprehensive governance structures in place, with the usual, as again one would expect, risk, performance, quality management type measurements that we look at regularly, and externally things like Ofsted, which the army was the apprenticeship program was Ofsted-ed last September. It was assessed as good. It was the biggest Ofsted inspection that Ofsted has ever done in terms of distributed training. So we had around 20 Ofsted inspectors that came to visit the army across the UK. So it was a big beast in itself to organise. And whilst the army is very familiar with Ofsted duty of care type inspections, this is the only education inspection that Ofsted actually do, akin to a school type inspection.
You talked about how the army is developing and so on its own apprenticeship schemes. What's the latest one you're working on? What's the one that's coming up that you say has become a requirement for, and how are you bringing it about that?
So the exciting one that's coming up, that is hot off the press, actually, is we are, for senior NCOs, mainly warrant officers, I think, at the minute, we are going to trial a level 7, so that's postgraduate, apprenticeship which is called the senior leader apprenticeship, and it will come with an MBA qualification as well. and we will be offering that to our senior soldiers, or trialling it to see whether it, you know, start small, check that it's right. We will are targeting a trial for that from September 2025.
Karen, you who've now been in the army for over a quarter of a century, it sounds a long time for it that way.
It does.
You have been doing this job as assistant head of learning and development for the army for over 2 years, and you're coming to the end of your time before moving on to fresh opportunities and fresh fields yourself. There are 37 different trades available as an apprentice in the British Army today. If you had your time again, which one would you choose?
Which one would I choose? That's interesting. So when I joined, I really wanted to join the Ink Corps. That's no longer the case. So if I was to go back, what would I want to do? Do you know what? I'd want to do something completely different. Maybe, so my husband is an ex-avionics technician. I quite fun, and I have to listen to him on a daily basis talk to me about aircraft. So do you know what? I'd quite like to come back and be an aircraft technician and show him how easy it is.
Show
or
him
not.
Colonel Caroline Emmett, Assistant Head of Learning and Development of the British Army, thank you very much for being my guest on General Talk. And my thanks once again to Colonel Caroline Emmett, Lieutenant Nathan Cosgrove, Privates Rob Brooks Wardle and Ellis Feathers for sharing their insights into the Army Apprenticeship Programme. For information on how to join the Army, search Army Jobs in your web browser. If you enjoy this podcast and would like to hear more, then visit the growing library of past editions, which can be found at armybenevolentfund.org. Do join us next month as General Talk marks the 80th anniversary of D-Day in a special programme featuring Sir Max Hastings, General the Lord Richards and General Sir Michael Jackson, before we pick up the apprenticeship trail once again in July as we venture out to stable and ranges. And until then, from me, Harry Bucknell, thank you for listening and farewell. Thanks to Adrian Payton for his help in putting this programme together. Series editors were Kath Mills and Neil Kernahan. Studio editing was by Michael Siliano. This has been a Gamekeeper production for the Army Benevolent Fund.